Lemby, welcome to the United Stand. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news and transfer news as Fabrizio Romano gives a big update on Manchester United transfer plans. Apparently, it's systems go, with Carrick now the chosen choice. Man United can finally start moving on transfers. But I've got a bit of a question about that. Should we not have been doing that anyway, considering Michael Carrick is a head coach and not a manager and Jason Wilcox is the director of football? So you're telling me we've had to wait until Carrick gets the job before we can decide what we're doing in the window? What load of crap. Also, an interesting article coming out in The Telegraph with James Ducker giving updates on Tchouaméni, Anderson, Baleba and Tonali, and Bruno Fernandes wants Fernandes from West Ham. Should we be listening to players, or is it just a case of we listen to players when they're doing something we want and then we don't want to listen to them when they do something that we don't want? So lots to get into on the show this morning. Also, a little bit more fallout from the decision that Carrick's going to get the job. Not a fallout in the sense we're going to fall out, but just a couple of things coming out around that. What I would say, just to throw it in there before we go to what Fabrizio said, I think look, Carrick's got the job, as I've said. Let's hope it works out. Don't agree with it, but let's hope it works out. Certainly don't agree with these gaslighting Carrick fans who are out there trying to make out that if you don't want Carrick, you should go and support someone else and you want your own club to lose. Ridiculous. It sounds to me like they're a little bit sensitive, these Carrick inners, isn't it? You know, apparently if you're not sure about Carrick, you're not a real United fan. Apparently if you're not sure about Carrick, you want United to lose. They sound like they do protest too much to me. But I think my concerns are, and I'll put these out there now, my concerns are the reason that they've gone for Carrick is he's cheap and so is Steve Holland, and we can't actually afford to get a decent manager. That's, I think, a valid concern that only time will tell. And my second concern is they've gone for Carrick because he's a head coach and they don't want a manager. I mean, this is why Amrim got sacked, because he said, I'm a manager, not a head coach. Those two things concern me. Have we gone for Carrick because he's cheap and we can't afford a decent coach? And have we gone for Carrick because he's happy to be a head coach and can be moulded by our owners? So, look, they are valid concerns. We'll have to wait and see. But, look, let's get into this. So, Fabrizio Romano this morning and James Ducker landing some big updates. Look, the big one about Tonali is that Man United are put off by his gambling past. This is the fourth time in 2 months a journalist close to United has mentioned his gambling problems. I'll say it again, and I said it in March. Tonali to Man United ain't happening, is it? You don't put out there somebody's past, especially a past like that, and then expect them to want to sign you. And I think it's bad by United. I really do. I don't think that's a very classy way of behaving, to talk about somebody's gambling past like that when he's been one of the best midfielders in Europe for the last year. And it'll be very interesting if that's the reason United are swerving Tonali and trying to get the fan base not to do it. Because I've heard it four times now, four times from four separate journalists, that Man United are nervous about his gambling past. And I think, you know what? I don't actually like that. I don't like that being a reason, because it just takes it away from football and makes us like sort of like go, yeah, we shouldn't go with him because he's got a problem. It'll be very interesting if Arsenal sign him or Real Madrid sign him, because if he's good enough to go and sign for Arsenal and Real Madrid with this perceived problem, is it just United using it as an excuse because they don't want to spend £100 million? So we'll talk about that. But first and foremost, some big stuff coming out from Romano in the last hour or so. For the transfer window, now there will be the final assessment to decide which situation the board wants to attack, even before the World Cup, and then something also after the World Cup. Fabrizio Romano in full PR mode. Conversations for summer plans have started. They can decide who to move for now that Michael Carrick is the clear favourite for the job. And discussions over such transfer plans have already actually begun at Man United, with the club moving forward with Michael Carrick. I mean, look, exciting, exciting. And we'll delve into some of the players that it could be. But I almost feel like, you want to be wrong. You don't want to be right. I take you back to the March international break and that 3.5 week period where Man United didn't play a game. And clearly, Jason and co just went on holiday. We had 3.5 weeks and a March international break where I would have thought we would have spoken to managers, we would have spoken to players, and we would have got our eggs in order. And here we are in the middle of May. We're going to give it to Carrick anyway, so we've not spoken to other managers. And we're now going to finally decide what we want to do in the window. And you sort of like go, that's got nothing to do with Carrick. He's just been working on trying to get the job, so leave him out of it. You sort of look at Wilcox and Berarda and go, You sacked Amorim in the first week in January. You've had all of January, all of February, all of March, all of April. And in the middle of May, you're giving it to Carrick and going, now let's start thinking about what we want to do. What have you done for 4.5 months? See, like, if I'm Sir Jim Ratcliffe, what have you actually done for 4.5 months? Who have you spoken to? Why have you not got players lined up to come to Manchester United, regardless of the manager? Like, you know, on the one hand, you're giving interviews saying Jason Wilcox is saying, you know, I can't help getting involved in the coaching. So he's obviously going to be very involved in the recruitment. And then it's like, well, now Carrick's here. We can now decide what we're going to do in the middle of May. Mate, come on. We've got to have been talking. We've got to have a bloody... I mean, also, it's hypocritical. You're telling me that now Carrick's here, we can discuss what we want to do. But you literally want a head coach. You don't want a manager that's going to decide who we sign. So I'm sort of confused by what Romano's update is here. Now that Carrick's in, we can finally start deciding what we want to do in the market. But for the last 2 years, we've been told that the manager doesn't decide the targets anymore. We've got, you know, the board does. So I don't know. Look, at the end of the day, it is a little bit confusing, but hopefully we will now start moving forward on transfers, because it seems to me that it might be a little bloody late. If we haven't actually, you know, finalised what we want to do, it might be a little bit late. However, I actually do have a little bit of a theory here. I don't think United are waiting for Carrick on transfers. I don't think Manchester United are going to sit in a room with Carrick and say, what do you want? I think United don't work like that anymore. Carrick will be a head coach. Carrick will sit in the room, but he'll have a minority view because he'll be able to be outvoted by Berarda and Favell and Wilcox. I think United know who they want. I think it's more about when they miss out on players, they can go, well, we only got Carrick in the middle of May. So, like, you know, I think they know they want Anderson. I think they know they want Anderson, and I think they've known that for a very long time. I just think it might be that, you know, if he goes to Man City, well, you know, we weren't actually ready to go for him anyway. So it might be a little bit of PR in the sense that they can use it as an excuse if they don't get Anderson, because they can say, well, we didn't get Carrick till the middle of May. So, you know, there we go. But look, in reality, I said this at the start of the show last night, the positive about the decision around the manager is that we have to now start moving forward, because Elliot Anderson will know Michael Carrick's got the job, Tchouaméni will know, Baleba will know, whoever else we're going to go for will know that Carrick's the manager now. I personally don't think it makes a lot of difference to players. I really don't. I mean, as I said last night, I think Baleba would sign for Man United if Mr. Bean was in charge. I think he's desperate to sign for Man United, which in a way is a bit of a concern, but, you know, I don't think it's going to matter to him. I think the manager only really matters if you are a really top player. So if you're a top player and you're choosing between Man City, Arsenal, Bayern Munich, Man United, you're probably going to look at who the manager is. If you're Baleba and Man United are the only club for you, I don't think it really matters who the manager is. So I think for United, I don't actually agree that we waited for the manager before we decide who we're going for, because I think there's certain players who would sign for us anyway. I think we're waiting on something else. I don't think we're waiting on Carrick. I think we're waiting on Anderson. I think we're waiting to see what players want to do, like last summer with Delap. Delap was going to be our striker. We would not have Benjamin Sesko if Delap had signed. You know, the history will teach you the present. We only have Sesko because Delap chose Chelsea. Wilcox wanted Delap. He thought he was going to get Delap. Delap chose Chelsea, and we were suddenly in panic mode, and we were like, Gyökeres wants to go to Arsenal, and we ended up with Sesko. So I think similarly again with Anderson, we are probably waiting to see what happens with him. I think that is what's slowing down our midfield move. And I think once Anderson decides what he wants to do, that will be the domino. The worrying thing about the Anderson deal is if he doesn't come to us, it sets a very high price for what the rest of the midfield targets are going to be. I mean, at the end of the day, if Anderson signs for Manchester City for £100 million, I don't think that makes Brighton go, you can have Baleba for 50. I think that makes Brighton go, you can have him for 75. So look, it's going to be a challenging summer. I think that now that we know what's going to happen with the manager, all eyes have to be on the recruitment, because if we go for Carrick, who is cheap, and then we go for crap cheap midfielders who are cheap, you've got to question the ambitions of the football club. And I think we're all sort of sat here now, and I would say to you, what do you think the ambitions of the football club are? Because your thoughts are as valid as my thoughts as they are as any ex-player's thoughts, because, you know, let's be honest, Man United's vision is about as clear as a foggy morning. You know, I don't know what the ambitions are of the football club, but we'll certainly find out with this summer transfer window. And you can't... Some people want to sort of do it with the manager and say, well, there wasn't anybody else. Chelsea are literally sat there interviewing Iriola, what's his name? Alonso. There are literally other managers out there. Carrick is not the only one in the shop. And when it comes to midfielders, there are literally loads of them out there. We can't sit there at the end of August, is what I'm saying, and go, well, we ended up with Belaba because there was nobody else. There are literally loads of options out there. So Man United's ambition isn't just about what they want to do. It's about what they can achieve. And I think what I would say there is, like, ambition is also linked to competence. You know, if you want to break, if you're a fast sprinter for, I don't know, the USA, and you have the potential to, you know, break the 100 meter record, but you keep tying your laces up wrong and tripping over, that's incompetence. You have the ability to win the race, but you keep messing it up. Manchester United, it's not just about, you know, we sign Belaba. It's about, do we sign Belaba because we miss out on everybody else because we're crap at negotiating, or do we sign Belaba because he's our top choice? So it's not just, our ambition can be ruined by incompetence. Our ambition can be ruined by stupidity. So we might have a director of football who just picks the wrong people. Well, that's incompetence. We might have a director of football who wants the right people but isn't good enough to get them, so ends up with the wrong people. See what I mean? So our ambition is twofold, really. Incompetence can ruin our ambition. You know, ineffectiveness can ruin our ambition. We've got to get the right players in. Exactly. We've got to do that. Let's have a look at some of the stuff that James Ducker has said, though, because I found this article really interesting this morning. So it started off with, we'll come back to the Bruno Fernandes one, but it started off with Manchester City. So James Ducker is a journalist for The Telegraph, very, you know, decent journalist around Man United over the years. You'll have heard the name. Manchester City are firm favourites to sign Manchester United's number one target, Elliot Anderson. The valuation is around £100 to £120 million, which would eat up the vast majority of United's budget. So they are likely to be forced to look elsewhere. Is that the white flag? And you know what? I have said all along, and you know, I am not a negative person. I just want Man United to win. And, you know, I'm just honest about things that I think are bad for the club. I was ridiculously positive about getting Bruno Fernandes. There hasn't been a lot to be positive about with United. I've always had a feeling we'd get Elliot Anderson. You know, it's new kit launch today, new kit day today. I mean, I don't know whether we're meant to buy the kits or not anymore. I'm a little bit confused, actually, because you've got people like Terry who say he doesn't buy kits, don't fund the Glazers. If you fund the Glazers, you're a moron. And yet he's out there going, Carrick's a great appointment, which is basically the board. So I don't know what we're meant to. I'm not blaming Terry. I'm just saying, I don't know. Are we buying kits now or not? There are no protests. So I don't know. Should we buy the kits to help the club spend money on transfers? Are we not buying the kit? I don't know. Answers on a postcard with that. But anyway, look, new kit out today. Anderson's about to make his decision. We don't normally release our kit this early before the end of the season. Is there a Goldbridge conspiracy theory that this means we're about to announce something big at the same time as Carrick? I have a bit of a conspiracy theory. Carrick's divisive. Some people are really happy. Some people are concerned. The new kit's coming out early. I don't think announcing Carrick's going to make people buy the new kit. Are we about to drop a big transfer? And when you look at it, Elliot Anderson... As I was doing last week, Elliot Anderson. From September to May, it's been Elliot Anderson. Everybody, David Ornstein, Fabrizio Romano, Ben Jacobs, The Telegraph, The Manchester Evening News, The Athletic, everybody has been Elliot Anderson. And I've always felt there was something there. I remember Ben Jacobs saying in November as well that it wouldn't be more than £80 million. Now, I don't think he's going for 100, and I still think we might get him. I just have this feeling that new kits, Carrick's not massively popular, United need to drop something that's going to go boom, and make everybody buy the kit and everybody get excited. And, you know, I don't think Carrick's appointment is going to give United that boom. And quite rightly so. You know, it's a big decision. They've made a lot of bad decisions. And, you know, it's, you know, quite rightly, I'm quite comfortable with the fact that, you know, there's a bit of a split. That's fine. I think the club will be understanding of that, to be fair. What gets everybody to get together is that United are in a position where they have a big, big signing for Manchester United. And I just have a feeling about Anderson. So there's your negative Nelly there. I've always said this to you, I've just got a funny feeling about Elliot Anderson. I do. I'm not on drugs, no. Now, I do. I've got a funny feeling that we're going to announce a big signing. I think we'll announce a big signing anyway, but I've just got a funny feeling it might be Elliot Anderson. Everything just seems to be aligning. You know, the fan base is a little bit unsure about the board and Carrick. The new kit's out. Pep's leaving Man City potentially. Ben Jacobs said it'll be below £80 million. I mean, that might have been to do with relegation, to be honest with you. I just have a feeling. Everyone's laughing at me in the chat. I do. I just have a feeling about Elliot Anderson. I really do. But what I will say, if we don't sign him and he goes to Man City for less than £80 million, what is United's excuse going to be? Because they have spun this fan base all season, regularly, at least once a week since September, through all the bad results under Amorim, through all the good results with Carrick. They've never stopped. They've never gone, oh, it's speculation. They've never said he's not a priority. He's been a priority for 8 months. And if we just miss out to Manchester City like we missed out to Semenyo in January, I think the club have got a lot of things to answer for. And, you know, in that Telegraph update, it says, to me, it almost reads, you know, when it says the value of Anderson could eat up most of our budget, it's almost like they're trying to say, well, look, you know, understand, we'd like Elliot Anderson, but we need to buy a lot of players and Elliot Anderson would take up a lot of our budget. It's almost like we're all meant to go, oh, yeah, Elliot Anderson's a good player, but it's right, we're right not to sign him because he'll actually cost £100 million. You know, we could spend that on two other players. What a load of rubbish. We all know Elliot Anderson was going to cost £100 million. We knew it at Christmas. You can't come out in May and go, oh, actually, he's a little bit more expensive than I thought. You know, it's like going down your local Ferrari dealer, isn't it? And then you go, I like that one. And they go, that's 100 grand. And you go, what? I thought it'd be about 10 grand. Where have you been? Under a rock? You walk into a Ferrari dealership and you think you're going to get that car for 10 grand. Yeah. You're an idiot. Get out. So get out. So look, I think that, look, I get the negativity. Some people think we've been spun and, you know, the club are just going to make up excuses for not going for Anderson. They cannot use the excuse that he's more expensive than they thought. They can't use that. Especially when, you know, you can almost lump Tonali into that as well. Oh, Anderson's too expensive at £100 million. But you're being linked to Belaba for £70 million. Like, buying Anderson for £100 million is like buying a Ferrari for 100 grand. Buying Belaba for £70 million is like spending £30 on a packet of crisps. It's like you're way overpaying, even though it's cheaper than the Ferrari. You know, some things are worth £100 million and some things are massively overpriced at 70. So, look, we've got to be very careful about walking away from deals because we don't like the price. If the price is right and you've been linked to that player for 9 months, you can't hide behind the price when any idiot would know what the price is. So look, Elliot Anderson is definitely in the balance. I just have a funny feeling about it, that it's going to happen. But if we walk away or we don't do that deal, I think Wilcox and co. has to take criticism because they've been more than happy to hide behind Elliot Anderson all season as a positive story to distractors. And then when push comes to shove, they go, oh, we can't afford it. It's cowardly. Look, these are things, look, I think the Michael Carrick appointment is very divisive. It's risky. It's exciting. You know, whichever way you choose, I can see. But what we can't do is take a risky, cheap managerial appointment and then not go and get good players. That's like, you know, that's like starting a fire and putting petrol on it and hoping it's going to go out. Like, you need to balance the risk of Carrick with the, talented, experienced signings. You can't take inexperienced Carrick and then give him risky signings as well. You can't take, in life, you can't take two risks. The probability of failure is too high. If you take a risk, your second decision has to be more balanced. So we can't go risk. We've got to go risk and then, you know, balanced. And I think with Carrick as manager, you have to deliver that first, you know, they have to deliver a signing. The way I always look at it is, when Ollie got the job, we're all singing, Ollie's at the wheel. And when it goes wrong, to be fair, I think everybody said he's got to go. But there wasn't anybody saying, well, I didn't say we should do this. And, you know, with Carrick, I think some people are saying, don't do it. And if it goes wrong, they'll be saying, you know, I did say don't do it. If it goes well, those people saying do it will be going, I said do it. So there's a bit of a division there. You can't have that with the signings as well. I always say, how does the fan base react to everything? If we sign Elliot Anderson, I think everybody's excited. And if he flops, I don't think many people are going to go, Wilcox is a wanker. Whereas if we don't get Anderson and we go and sign, I don't know, it's always belabor, isn't it? But let's say, I don't know, let's say, who's another player that we could go for? Tyler Adams, yeah? If Tyler Adams is a major signing for Man United, I don't think everyone's going to go, that's a good signing. So United need to go and buy people that excite the fan base, because then if it goes wrong, there's not going to be a lot of people who can go, well, I told you so. Also on the article from, well, little bit about Tchouaméni, right? So what's the latest with Tchouaméni, Mark? So I personally think there is hope with Elliot Anderson, but let's remove that hope. Let's say he signs for Manchester City. There are only three other players you can get that are going to make people go with the uncertainty of Carrick and get excited about the midfielder, because we are replacing Casemiro here. So if we don't get Anderson because he goes to Man City, I don't think we're going to get Tonali, which I'll talk about in a minute, which leaves Tchouaméni or Bruno Guimarães. And beyond those four, I can't see it. Unless you lot can give me a name, if we don't get Anderson, Tchouaméni, Tonali or Bruno Guimarães to replace Casemiro, I think we're in trouble. I think it's a risk, whether it's Scott, Belaba, Garner, whatever. There's too much risk there. You know, you've got to replace Casemiro with, you know, absolute A-star quality. And I don't think there's anybody out there beyond. And look, Daniel says Fernandes at West Ham. Mate, I've seen him play. He might work out well, but you're replacing Casemiro with a West Ham midfielder who's 20 in his early 20s. I'd be much more comfortable with Fernandes coming in as the second or third midfielder. We're talking about the replacement for Casemiro that's going to play every week. I think Fernandes and Mainoo as our starting midfield next year, going into two games a week, is quite scary. So, look, personally, some people might agree with you. Personally, I think replacing Casemiro has got to be Tchouaméni, Anderson, Bruno G or Tonali. If Anderson's going to City, Tonali's not on the options and Bruno Guimarães is too old, it's got to be Tchouaméni. Now, the situation with him is that, and I think James Ducker said this in his article as well, if Man City let Rodri go to Real Madrid, there is an opportunity for Tchouaméni to go and Real Madrid would be looking to cash in to help that happen. So I think with Tchouaméni, we're very much in the hands of Jose Mourinho, because this is not like Elliot Anderson, who is leaving Forest and choosing where to go. This is a player that wants to stay at Real Madrid, who they like. It's just an upgrade. They don't want to sell Tchouaméni and he doesn't want to go. It's just if they sign Rodri, who's one of the best holding midfielders in the world, he won't get game time and they want to bring some money in, so they'll sell him. So it's a weird one, because we can't, you know, you knock on the door of Belaba and he wants to leave Brighton. You knock on the door of Anderson and he's leaving Forest. You knock on the door of Tonali and he's leaving Newcastle. You knock on the door of Tchouaméni and he's going, I'm not coming out. I'm happy where I am. But if they don't want me, I will. So it's like, I mean, coming out to play. I don't mean like, you know, he's not what you lot think. So I think that with Tchouaméni, it's hard to get optimistic, but he could sign. You know what I mean? Anderson, you know he's going. Tonali, you know he's going. Belaba, you know he's going. But with Tchouaméni, the biggest problem is he might not go. It's not really in our hands in any way, shape or form. It's not about persuading him. It's not about the fee. It's not about the wages. He could easily be a Real Madrid player next season. And if he is, we can't get him. So as I think, look, Anderson, I still hold a hope out for. Tonali, I don't think there's a hope in hell. Bruno Guimarães, I don't think there's a hope in hell. And Tchouaméni, I think it depends on Jose Mourinho. So realistically, I think it's Tchouaméni or Anderson, which I'd be very happy with. But what if it's neither? And you can almost look at all four of them and go, any of them would be great, but all four of them could just disappear. But Tchouaméni is different in the sense that if Real Madrid want to keep him, he will stay. The situation with him is he's happy at Real Madrid. They really like him. But if they can upgrade him, they will let him go to generate funds and he would look to come to Manchester United. So, yeah, it's one of those. I also think Nguyen makes a good point. Anderson is not really a six. Yeah, I think that is a valid point. I mean, it's not one for now. He isn't really a six. And I think with the in an Amorim system with three centre-backs, you don't need a six. I think in a back four, which is what Carrick has played, you do need a six. So Anderson and Maynou in front of Maguire and Martinez next season would be very interesting, certainly. But look, why can't we get Tonali, Mark? I will come into your comments in a minute, but there's quite a few stuff to go through that. Despite this came in from James Ducker in the Telegraph as well. He said, despite being one of the best in his position, Tonali's betting breaches make him a risky signing and Newcastle would demand a huge fee. United have assessed Tonali, but interest has cooled as they focus on other targets. Now, look, Man United can make whatever choice they want. We can't dictate it. We can only give an opinion on it. Why would you assess Tonali? I'm asking you the question. Why would you assess Tonali and then go on to other options? So let me break it down for you. Why would you look at Tonali and then go, we'd rather get Belaba? Why would you look at Tonali and decide you don't want to go for him? I don't understand that. And you know what I think it is? Price. I think there is a... I'm not going to make a big issue of it because we don't have the evidence yet. We won't have the evidence until probably the middle of August. But what if there is a... What if somebody mentioned it on the show last night. What if there is a price issue here? What if Tonali and Anderson aren't possible because we don't want to pay £100 million and we don't want to pay the wages? Man City will be offering Elliot Anderson 250 grand a week, maybe even 300 grand a week. Tonali will want 250 grand a week. What if the reason we're not going for Anderson and Tonali is wages? What if we're now saying we don't want to pay 250 grand a week to people? I mean, that could be a reason. I don't see how you'd look at Tonali and go, yeah, we'd rather go for Belaba. I saw what, funnily enough, it was also James Ducker, and he said this about Tonali, about Belaba. He said, and what I'm saying here is, imagine what I've just said about Tonali. Why would you look at Tonali and say he's not for us? But then this update, Man United have explored the possibility of Belaba, but were put off by Brighton's 100 million valuation last summer. It's been a challenging season for him, although injuries, the disruption of the AFCON and family problems are all factors in his drop-off in form. So Belaba's basically been shit this season, but, you know, we're willing to find reasons for it. AFCON, injuries, family problems. So we'll still go for Belaba despite him being shit this season because there's reasons for it. AFCON, family problem, injuries. But we won't go for Tonali. Yeah, and that's what I'm sort of setting up here. So we've looked at Tonali and we're not interested, but Belaba, who was priced at 100 million last summer and has been crap this season, we will look at. And that's what I'm sort of, that's where I'm sort of confused, because I'm still laboring under this best in class thing. And I know we haven't done it with the manager, and I know best in class is basically just a myth that United use for idiot fans who believe it, but I'd like to believe best in class is a thing. So why do you look at Tonali, who's been one of the best midfielders in Europe and is available this summer at 26 to replace Casemiro? Why do you go, he's not for us, but Belaba, who's had a bad season and plays for Brighton, why would you go for him? Answer the question. Answer the question as best you can. Why would United look at Tonali and go, no, and then look at Belaba and go, yes? And he's had a bad season. and they're making excuses for it. Family problems, injuries, AFCON. But Tonali has had a great season and we're making excuses about things that happened 2 years ago. Oh no, we can't go near him because he's got gambling problems, but we will go near Belaba because, you know, his issues are, you know, inconsistency, injuries, and poor performance. I think sometimes you've got to look a little bit granular, and I'm like, why have we steered away from Tonali, but when we're more than happy to keep Belaba there? Because as footballers, one of them's up here and one of them's down here. So what's making us take that person above him? And the only thing I can think of is wages. Because the transfer fees aren't that different. You know, $70 million for Belaba, £100 million for Tonali. Across a five-year deal, you're talking $5 million a year. Is it wages? Is it going to be wages with Anderson as well? You know, Belaba's wages are probably going to be somewhere between 100 and 150 grand a week. Tonali's are going to be north of 225. Is it wages? Is that what it is? Because if it is wages, I go back to what I said at the start, is one of the reasons we've gone with Carrick because we can't afford a Tuchel or an Enrique. Because if you go to Tuchel and say there's £20 million a year, I don't think he signs for England. If you go to Enrique and say there's £30 million a year, I don't think he signs for PSG. I think everybody has a price. Maybe Man United are still operating under financial restraints because we haven't had the financial results of this year yet. We're back in the Champions League. We're going to make £100 million, but how much did we lose this year? So, look, I don't know. I find it confusing as to why some people are being dismissed when they're absolutely gold. I mean, I look at Tonali and I go, fucking hell. Stick him in the midfield with Mainoo. He's absolutely perfect. He's not Casemiro. He's very different, but he's perfect. So very interested to see where we're going to land on these midfielders. I do have a story about Fernandes, but there's a few comments I just want to get into. Andy Atherton says, Carrick is perfect for these owners. We might have a decent summer window, but going forward, it's let's get top four, average windows and fund the new stadium. It's my biggest fear, Andy. It's my biggest fear. And you can't blame Carrick and you can't really blame the signings. My biggest fear is that the people who set the tone are happy with fourth every year because it's not, you know, it's not about winning, it's about earning. How little can we I'm just concerned that there's somebody in the club or people in the club saying, how little can we spend to be in the Champions League every year? It's a sentence. How little can we spend to be in the Champions League every year? I'm just worried that's the mantra. I have no evidence. And it could get blown out of the water by signing Elliot Anderson tomorrow. But my fear is, how little can we spend and being the Champions League? It's sort of the Arsenal motto when they built their stadium, fourth place and not spending. So whereas other clubs will go, what's it going to take to win the league? How much is it going to cost to win the league? Whereas we could be, how little can we spend to be in the top four? And that's what worries me. That's what worries me, because some of the things we're doing doesn't put out that concern, you know? Well, but it's unfair to say it at the moment because we don't know. Like, we could go and sign Tonali, Anderson and Tchouaméni and, you know, and a left winger, and in which case that concern would be allayed. Going to be big miss again if we miss Tonali and another big club like Arsenal get him. Remember Rice, says Michael Murray. Well, that's my concern on Tonali, by the way. I'm not going back to Tonali, but that's my concern. We don't want Tonali because he's gambling issues. If he goes to Arsenal, Champions League finalists and Premier League winners, what the fuck are we talking about, you know? So it'd be interesting to see where Tonali goes, because we're not in a position to make choices like that if clubs that are bigger than us are happy to do it. It makes us look stupid. I think it's a bug in Data Dean's system if we go for Belaba instead of Tonali, says Catton. Mike Royce says, a bit off topic, I know, but I researched the last time we released a new season's kit before the current season finishes, and we've never done it until today. Maybe another diversion tactic, says Mike. Look, you know, the new kit's out. I don't know whether we're meant to buy it or not. I know Seb wants one. And, you know, I'm not going to stop getting him stuff because, you know, why should he suffer? But I presume it's okay to buy kits anyway, because everyone's still buying season tickets, and everybody's happy with the, well, a lot of people are very happy with the decisions being made by the board. So I don't know. Answers on a postcard on that one. But I don't mind us releasing the kit early. I think sometimes waiting until the end of June is a bit crap anyway. I just wonder, conspiracy, whether we're about to announce a new player, because once the new kit's out, a new player can hold it up, can't they? I love Carrick, but big players won't be coming to play for him. He is not Enrique or Ancelotti. I'll support him and back him, but this really puts me off, says Golden Boy Wazza. I think people still underestimate how important Casemiro is. When he played well, we finished third. When he played badly, we finished eighth. And that BRT, I think you're right. You are absolutely right. And I think that's why the replacement is so important. You don't replace a 33-year-old who's had a really good season, who has won some of the biggest prizes in the world, and he's respected in the dressing room and on the pitch and a leader. You don't replace that with a 22-year-old who's never played at the highest level, because it's obvious what's going to happen. It's going to take them time to get to that level. I mean, if you lose, imagine, like, you know, back in the olden days when they used to be like battles, yeah? Imagine you keep winning battles, yeah? And your captain, who, you know, leads the battle, you know, suddenly retires, or worse. In your next battle, who do you want to replace him? Somebody that everybody respects and is experienced, or somebody who's brand new and has got no experience? You know, at the end of the day, I know Bruno is more important to us than Casemiro, but Casemiro is one of those people that when you look around the dressing room, you go, well, he's won 3 Champions Leagues in a row. You don't replace that with, you know, some kid from West Ham or Brighton. You go and replace him with somebody that's respected in the game. And the second midfielder can be the kid from Brighton or West Ham, but the main guy's got to be somebody that, you know, demands respect. If Tchouaméni walks in the door, you know, I've won things at Real Madrid. If Tonali walks in the door, I'm Newcastle's best midfielder, I've played in the Champions League. If Elliot Anderson walks in the door, okay, I mean, and to be fair, if Elliot Anderson walks in the door, people might go, well, what have you done? But I do think we need to bring some experience in. I'm absolutely convinced about it. You are losing a guy that when he stands at the front and lead, you know, walks out, you go, he's done it all. It inspires people. You have to replace that. Bruno isn't as good as he was under Ollie's first year, and Carrick is statistically not as good as Ollie. So we're not going back to our ex. We are getting together with our ex's ugly twin sister, says Marlo. I did see a post actually last night about if Carrick can replicate what he's done in the last 4 months, we'll be cooking next season. I agree. You know there's going to be a but. I agree. If he can replicate what he's done in the last 4 months, next season, we'll be in a title race. It's just whether you believe those results have substance behind them, or whether you think those results are a little bit are hiding something. And I'll leave it there. George, welcome to Members Club. Thank you very much. Pete Phillips says, 2 years since we were promised best in class. Can anyone remember and name anything that would qualify as best in class? Spin, and how much of the Manchester have we got back into Manchester United? I just think we've been consistently lied to. Hopefully they get it right in the end. Oliver said I had a vasectomy yesterday while listening. It helped. Oh my God. Is that one of them things where you do it like under a local anaesthetic and you're awake? I remember having a mole removed from my arm about 15 years ago, and they just numbed my arm and slit it open and were stitching it up, and you could feel it moving. And oh, it's just weird. The club thing belabor is, sorry, Emily Derry says, the club think Belabor is a big signing, so I think I'll wait till Anderson is holding up a shirt. But the incompetence of the whole process around Carrick's appointment is the big thing that annoys me, says Emily. Well, we've got Ben Jacobs on the show at 2 o'clock with Beth. And I think the big question, and Beth's already spoken about this morning, that we'll be asking Ben is, you said consistently that Man United were going to run a thorough process at the end of the season and interview other managers. So why have they abandoned that? Were you misinformed, or have they just decided not to? I mean, I think it's an important question, and it'll be interesting to know what the answer is, because if United were planning to run a thorough process, including Michael Carrick, and do it at the end of the season, and they've now abandoned it to just give it to Carrick, we end up in the same position, but does that not give a little bit of an insight into how this club is run? Incompetently, you know, they plan on doing something and then they abandon it, which seems to be happening a lot. So Jim Radcliffe, Amorim's here for 3 years, 3 months later you're fired. Haphazard, you know, inconsistent decisions. You know, Athletic are saying PSG are interested in West Ham's Fernandez, gonna get the deal done quickly, says HFBF. Look, there was an article in the Telegraph today about Fernandes at West Ham, and Bruno Fernandes has been talking around the club that we should go for him. I think we should go for him. I think a lot of you think we should go for him. I think the fact that he's been relegated by West Ham cheapens his price. He's shown that he's very good in the Premier League, and I think he'd be a good signing for Man United. I like his character. I like his profile. And I think it's a deal that Man United can get done, but I don't think he should be the replacement for Casemiro. I think you can't have him and Mainoo as our main midfield next season. I think it's too inexperienced. So I think he has to come on, you know, he has to come in as the second midfielder. Should we be listening to players about signings? No. We shouldn't be listening to players about managers, and we shouldn't be listening to players about signings either. Even if it was Cristiano Ronaldo in his prime, I wouldn't listen to him about signings. You know, you're a player. You're not a director of football, and you are not the CEO. So I'm not massively... And Bruno's our player of the year, but I still don't care what he thinks about players, because over the years, Bruno's had bad games. Bruno's had good games. Focus on your own game. We'll pick the team. So I don't think it matters whether Bruno Fernandes is going around saying, buy this player. If anything, I don't believe that. I mean, can you imagine Bruno Fernandes knocking on the door of Omar Berarda or Jason Wilcox saying, sign Fernandes? I'd say, get out. That shouldn't be happening at this. I mean, I would say shame on Berarda and shame on Wilcox if you're allowing players to come and talk to you about what players we should sign. I mean, that just shows a lack of respect, shows a lack of hierarchy. I couldn't give a fuck what a player thinks. I really couldn't. Do your job consistently, and then we'll talk. And I still won't listen. I'd be like, you're in my office telling me what players to buy. Can you show me the league table? We're not top of the league, are we? How did we do in Europe this year? What trophies have we won? I don't care what you think. Until you're performing to the level I want you to perform, and even then I don't care. My job is to buy the players, not you. You focus on playing well every week, because I thought we were shit at the weekend. So I just don't agree with players having any say. I remember when we used to have Paul Ince on the show, and you know that was a very good team, especially 94. What a great team. But there wouldn't be any conversation with Sir Alex about signings or, you know, anything like that, because, you know, your job is to perform for Man United every week. It's not to be involved in transfers or anything like that. So, look, but I do like Fernandes, and I'm sure Bruno's a big fan of him, but he shouldn't have any input on what Man United do, because that's the job of Jason Wilcox. That's the job of Omar Berarda. It's Frankie de Jong all over again, says Keel. Yeah, I think with Tchouaméni, I know what you mean. Like, you know, Frank de Jong didn't want to come, and was only going to come if Barcelona wanted to sell him, and it got very, very messy, and Tchouaméni could go down that route if we're not careful. But on the other hand, it could be very smooth. They might bring Rodri in which case he wants to come to us, in which case we do a deal. But also with Tchouaméni, why is it just us? What if Arsenal want him? There's sometimes a naivety in the window that, oh, if Real Madrid sell Tchouaméni, he'll come to Man United. Well, Arsenal are in the market for another midfielder. Maybe they'll go and get him as well. We're third because we moved to back four. Any competent manager playing back four can be successful with this squad. Under Amrin, we would be near relegation, says Sanil. If and when Carrick doesn't work out, it will have to be at the end of Ineos, right? Ineos should have bought change, but they would just be more of the same, says Rajaf. I believe we are about to announce a signing, says Nick P. And morning, Mark. Can you wish my mate Kane a happy birthday? He's 30 today. Can you wish him some gold Goldbridge advice? Thanks from Jamie, says Jamal. Happy birthday to Jamie, 30 today. Any words of advice? Age is but a number. Enjoy your life. We're not promised tomorrow. We've only promised today. There you go. Pep was all over Wharton last night at the final whistle. He wasn't shy to send out a calling card. Maybe his first choice, Anderson, isn't available, says Nick P. Maybe he wants both. Maybe he wants Wharton and Anderson. Daniel Thompson says, hi, Mark and United stand. Hope all well. It's like the board are afraid of getting quality and just go for the easy and cheap option, and that won't help us progress or compete. They have no ambition, just incompetence, and the football suffers for it. I tell you what, I'm not taking any credit, but if we sign Elliot Anderson, remember, I have been saying for weeks, I've just got a funny feeling. I've got a funny feeling. There's a big signing. There's a new kit. He's about to announce where he is. I've got a funny feeling about this Elliot Anderson thing. Is good football a non-negotiable? Wendell says, is good football a non-negotiable for you, or would Carrick's boring counter-attack football suffice if we challenge for the Premier League and the Champions League, similar to Arsenal? It's a good question. Look, I think some people have lost sight of the fact that Man United, like Liverpool, like Bayern Munich, like Real Madrid, like Barcelona, are more than a football club. We have an identity. Manchester United have always had an identity of playing exciting football, the Man United way. I don't think it's acceptable to abandon that. But in 2026, let's be real, some of our fans think it is. So I don't think it's difficult to win and play good football if you have the right setup. Do United have the right setup for that? Probably not. So maybe we will just have to try and win a title playing counter-attacking football. But I think that reflects badly on the board and the owners, because we are a football club that should be more than winning. It's about winning in a way that, you know, respects our history. But in 2026, I would put my hand up and say, I don't think that's the opinion of everybody. I'm from a generation where Man United should play the right way. They should play football the right way. But I don't necessarily think that's the same for all fans anymore. No matter who we sign, our midfield will struggle because of low defensive line play and the space that leaves between our attack and defence, says Joey. Joey, well, thank you very much for being a member, pal. And Ashley, who's been a member for 39 months, says, who do you think we will end up buying, as a lot of the stories are smoke and mirrors? I just have a feeling about Anderson. I think United have to land Carrick a big Casemiro replacement. Because even if we gave the job to Nagelsmann, which I think was my favourite, or Iriola, or Luis Enrique, if you replace Casemiro with Baleba or Fernandez, I think you make Enrique's job difficult. I think you make Nagelsmann's job difficult. You have to replace Casemiro with somebody decent. And especially if Michael Carrick's going to be the job. So I have faith that as incompetent as the board is, you have to replace Casemiro. And to do that, it has to be Tchouaméni, Tonali, Anderson or Bruno G. So I have to believe that we'll get one of those players. Mid says, the fact that we don't want Tonali tells me that Carrick Wilcox's vision is break up, play and counter with players like Anderson winning the ball back. D Gold says, would you consider a domestic trophy in top three next season a success for Carrick in his first full season? Yeah, I think it would be. I mean, what I will say is it doesn't mean I won't be sat there going, I hate this football. Doesn't mean I won't be sat here saying, we're not very good, we've got away with it. I don't know the circumstances of that top three and trophy, but on paper it would be. I think Champions League football next season is non-negotiable. You have to get it. We can't drop out of Europe again. If Carrick can get top four for next 2 years, that's progress, says Marcus, 9137. Yeah, but as I said before, is it good enough progress? Is it what is Man United finishing fourth for the next 2 years progress? Yes, because we haven't done that. That would be 3 years in a row in the Champions League. But we are Manchester United. Fourth and fourth is not really what Man United should be doing. Some people will be, like I say, in 2026, some people will be happy with it. Some people will be like, you know, it depends how we're playing, doesn't it? Depends how shit everybody else is. Depends how far you are off everybody else. Depends. Yeah. Like, there's context to it. Let's get real. And my fear is that maybe the board don't care about the context. Fourth, 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 fourth for 5 or 6 years while they build a stadium might make them happy. Nick says, funny thing is, it's such a domino in the midfield market. If Rodri leaves to go to Madrid and Elliot Anderson goes to Man City and then Madrid sell Tchouaméni. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you do raise a good point. If Rodri goes to Real Madrid and Elliot Anderson goes to Man City, that could benefit us getting Tchouaméni. Of course, absolutely spot on. So there is that domino effect, of course. Carrick has done all that could be asked of him, but appointing him is the easy choice, not the right one, says Ewan. Results have outperformed the actual stats. There we go. Thank you very much. And our performance under Carrick got worse for 4 months. Don't want to imagine what we'd be like over a year, says Kyron. And Zach says, it's absolutely stupid the way our club is run. And are they forgetting that once the season ends, we're against the clock before players head to the World Cup and transfers become tricky? And Emily Derry says, going for fourth every year and only do enough to scrape in, the margins become very small if things don't go to plan. The required investment for fourth grows every year as other clubs reach higher, says Emily. And look, there will be challenges next season as well. I mean, I know there is still a potential that they go down, but, you know, I think De Zerbi with a pre-season makes Spurs a lot better. They've got no Europe. They're playing once a week. Spurs under De Zerbi and the way he wants to play, they could be a real threat next season for top five. Similarly, Newcastle with one game a week could be a threat for top five as well. We don't know where Chelsea are going to land. Chelsea might not be in Europe. So, yeah, look, next season, Arsenal, Man City, United, Liverpool, you'd say top four. But Chelsea, Spurs and Newcastle with no European football playing once a week, I mean, it's benefited us. I mean, I think the one thing I would give you credit for, maybe myself, I can't remember, last summer we said playing one game a week is going to really help us. I don't think it helped us up until Christmas. I don't. And I think the reason for that is like running a marathon with a backpack on. Maybe you can run half the race and you don't really feel the weight. I think those teams from Christmas to today really started to feel the weight of European football, and we didn't have it. So we sort of moved away from them. On top of that, I think Amrim's style of football was quite intense, whereas Carrick's is more preservative. So I think from January to May, we've benefited from a more low-intensity football and the fact that everybody else has got tired. And we've had a great run. I mean, look at the results. But how many of those results are based on the fact that we've been a lot fresher than everybody else? Now, next season, maybe we'll be all right till Christmas, but from Christmas to May, we'll be one of those teams playing, you know, getting tired after a long season. But it'll be Chelsea, Newcastle and Spurs that can take advantage of it. So I think that, you know, next season's going to be very interesting. I would hope that we've analysed what benefited us and how it's going to benefit others and how we deal with that. Because the only teams that have really dealt with it are Man City and Arsenal. And the reason for that, Arsenal have a huge squad and Man City bought two players in January. So we need to prepare for January to May next season, because we could be really good until Christmas. Chelsea were good till Christmas. And then second half of the season, it will fall apart if we haven't got the squad. Patrick Lynch says, from what I can find, Belabor's current wage is 20 grand a week. Tonali's is 150k. It's definitely easier to entice Belabor for less wages. And I'm worried about this, Patrick. I do worry that we are looking at wages more than we are looking at quality. Ajit says, how would you rate a midfield of Tchouaméni, Yulman and Hackney? I like Tchouaméni. We won't go near Yulman. And Hackney is a championship player that I don't really know much about. So I like the Tchouaméni signing. I think the other two are a little bit uninspiring. I still hope that we're going to go towards Stiller. I think Stiller, I know a lot of you don't know a lot about him. I think Stiller could be as transformative for Man United as Bruno Fernandes. And if we sign Stiller, I don't care who the manager is, I'd get very excited. And I would applaud Wilcox and I would applaud Berarda. I still think Stiller is a fantastic signing. Stuttgart have had such a good season. And he's the talisman of that team. I mean, it's incredible what Stuttgart have done. I think they might be in the Champions League, actually, which will obviously make it very difficult. And I've heard nothing about Stiller and Mike. I mean, they're fourth place going into the final day. And they've got the same points as Hoffenheim with better goal difference. And their final game is at home to... they're away to Frankfurt. And Hoffenheim are away to Mönchengladbach. So look, if they get Champions League football, he might not be going anyway. Ashen says, if they go for Belabor for 70 million or above, they should 100% get investigated. There's something wrong there. Thank you very much. Okay, great show this morning. Do not miss the 2 o'clock show, because we've got Ben Jacobs on the show and we've got some questions about some of the things that haven't happened that he said was going to happen. So what has changed? Also, we'll get the latest on the midfield targets and where United like to go, likely to go. I think Ben's always been quite interesting around the price for Anderson as well. So I think we should get some clarity on that too. Carrick has got no bedding time next season because we've seen the way we play. He needs to hit the ground running fast or Christmas will be hard, says Ray. I think as well for next season, Ray, I don't normally really take much notice of the first six games of the season. But I think for Carrick, those first six games of the season are really important. I mean, you look at what Amrim got. We had Man City in the first six, Arsenal in the first six, and did we have Liverpool in the first six as well? I think we had... No, we didn't have Liverpool. I can't remember. We had, you know, a relatively difficult first six games. I think if you Carrick, he needs, like, Coventry, Ipswich, Crystal Palace, Sunderland. He needs six games that are not challenging. So, because I agree, we need a steady start. You know, you need that first six games where, you know, Bruno, the new players, Maguire, they can just navigate us through some good results at the start of the season. We do not want a challenging start to the season, you know. And also, you want to be home for, you know, the first game of the season. So I actually think the fixture list is going to be quite interesting because, we do not want a challenging start. Somebody makes a good point, though. Yeah, but if you get an easy start, Mark, then when you're in the Champions League, you're playing hard games after. And you're right. You know, if you get Ipswich and Coventry and Palace first three games, you might have 9 points. But then what's going to happen is when the Champions League games come out, of which there are eight after it, before and after those, you might be getting Man City away and stuff like that. So, yeah. Yeah. Is Carrick the board's solution to three problems? Difficult to get the manager they want. Give Bruno a stable last year. Low spend, says Marlo. And it's a good, fair point. Zach says, I know the midfield is the priority and a left winger, but we're forgetting how far behind our defence is. We need a world-class centre-half. Look at Arsenal. And Mid says, the fact that we don't want... There we go. Done that one. Great show, everybody. Really enjoyed it. We have got an 8 o'clock show for you tonight. We've got 2 o'clock with Ben Jacobs. Make sure you tune in for that. And obviously make sure that you are subscribing to the channel because I think we're moving into that area now where, you know, we could be reacting to anything. Like I reacted to the Carrick story yesterday. So lots to get involved in. Thank you so much for watching. Stay safe. I'll speak to you on the next one. Great show this morning. Really enjoyed it. And I tell you what, I do feel like, you know, whilst I'm concerned about the Carrick appointment, at least, you know, we're moving towards this transfer window now, which is going to be so important. I found this season really hard work. Really hard work. I think it's great that we're in the Champions League, but I think it's been a horrible season. You know, the amount of times where it's been 2 weeks without a game or 3 weeks without a game. Horrible, horrible season. You know, knocked out in both cups straight away. No European football. Some shitty results, not many good performances. So I'll be glad to see this season behind us and move into this exciting era of what can we do for next season? Because I never want a season like that again. I think it's one of the worst seasons I've ever watched as a Man United fan. It's been dreadful. And not necessarily, you know, we beat Liverpool home and away. It's just the gaps between games and not being in the cups. It's been a shitty season, really. So I'm excited to leave it behind us, know that we've got Champions League football and see what we're going to deliver. And I think next season's going to be great. You know, we're going to go from hardly playing to playing every 3 days. So very excited about the summer. Get involved in the United Stand. We will cover it all for you. Take care. Stay safe.